Chapter 2. The Sahara Desert. Instead of going forth from the body, as in your recent experience, today we will use the projected consciousness, he remarked, as he placed the thumb of his right hand between my eyes and the rest of his fingers over the top of my head. A feeling like a powerful electric current passed over my entire body. Removing his hand, he continued, I wish you to fix firmly in mind and recall frequently for contemplation the fact that the laws I explain and teach you to use are to bring you into a condition of conscious mastery over all forces and things on earth. This means that no matter what is being experienced, you are always at every instant in complete conscious control of your own mind and body and able to use your own free will at all times. In this state of projected consciousness, you are completely conscious and have full mastery over all your faculties every instant. There is nothing whatsoever about any of this instruction and its use that is either of the trance or hypnotic condition at any time. For in both trance and hypnosis, the experiencing individual's conscious will is not functioning, which is a most dangerous and disastrous activity to anyone who permits it to take place in his mind and body. There is no conscious mastery or dominion in trance or hypnotic practices, and they are most destructive and dangerous to the soul growth of the one who permits such practice. Please understand thoroughly that the conscious control, mastery, and use of the forces and things on this earth should at all times be under the direction of your inner or God self, through the perfect cooperation and obedience of all outer faculties in both mind and body to that inner guidance. There is no such thing as mastery without this, and those known as the Ascended Masters never, never intrude any activity upon the God-given prerogative of the individual's free will. A student may be given the experience of projection if an ascended master chooses to expand his consciousness temporarily so that he experiences things happening in two or more places at the same time. In such a condition, the student's faculties are completely under the control and direction of his own free will at every moment. He is fully conscious and active where his body may be, and also at the place to which the Ascended Master chooses to direct his attention for the instruction. The reason an Ascended Master temporarily raises the consciousness of the student is to show him how he may do this same thing for himself by his own effort, consciously and at will. Projected consciousness is but increasing the rate of vibration of the atomic structure in both the mind and body of the student. This is done by the radiation from an ascended master, and is an activity of the light which increases the vibratory rate up to the keynote he sets for the experience. In the higher rate, one uses his faculties of sight and hearing exactly as he does in daily life, except that they are expanded into the next octave or zone above the human. Such use of our senses is the same as we experience every moment of the waking state, because we can become aware of that which is near and that which is distant at exactly the same instant. The expansion or contraction of our consciousness is dependent entirely upon what the individual desires. This is always subject to the free will and conscious direction of the student. One can, of his own choice, be conscious of a certain tree in his garden, or of the entire garden. He uses the same faculty of sight to observe both, and uses it in exactly the same way. When he wants to see all of the garden, he makes his sight enlarge its activity until it takes in all he desires. The larger expansion still includes the smaller. So you see, you must be conscious of the full control of all your faculties in both places at the same time. The activity that takes place is really an enlargement of the force field in which the sight acts. The use of your faculty of sight in this projection or expansion of consciousness is accomplished by the raising of the vibratory rate in the optic nerve. The whole process corresponds to the thing that takes place when one uses a field or marine glass. In ordinary experience, human consciousness has been accustomed to use its faculties only within certain zones or force fields. And the proof of this is that one can listen to the sound of a person's voice who is physically present in the room speaking to him, and one can also hear the bell of a telephone ring somewhere else in the house at identically the same instant. All the faculties of the outer activity are elastic. They may be used as either a microscope or a telescope, depending entirely upon the desire and will of the individual. If one can be conscious of sound in the room in which his physical body stands, and also be aware of sound two or three rooms distant by exactly the same process, in a still farther expansion of this faculty, he can hear at a more distant place. To do this, one must increase the vibratory rate until it reaches into the more distant zone. When you contemplate this great inner God activity, do you not see how perfectly and readily the outer senses merge into the inner? And what has been two becomes one. This activity of consciousness can be applied to all the other senses, as well as those of sight and hearing. Such a raising process is natural, normal, and harmonious, as simple as the tuning of your radios to any desired wavelength. Radio wavelengths and those of sight and hearing are part of the same activity. Sound contains color, color contains sound. In ordinary daily experience, human beings can hear color and see sound whenever they become still enough. Within certain octaves or zones, vibration registers upon the nerves of the eyes, and the result is what we call sight. Others register upon the nerves of the ears, and the result is what we call hearing. The average person's eyes see only objects whose vibratory rate comes within these certain octaves, for they do not see below the infrared or above the ultraviolet ray or zone. Through the radiation of an ascended master, the atomic structure of the brain and eye vibrates fast enough to expand into the next octave above the human. This same activity can be expanded several octaves further, either by the master's radiation or at the command of the inner or God self of the individual. Many persons do have such experiences involuntarily, but rarely understand what they mean or how they come about. In cases where individuals have had moments of transcendent consciousness or being highly inspired, this is what has occurred, although they seldom recognize the assistance they have been given. Projected consciousness or vision has nothing whatsoever to do with mental pictures produced by suggestions that exist only in the minds of other human beings. Such thoughts and pictures are but flashed directly into the mind of another person by the one sending the suggestion. It is the same activity that takes place when one reflects the image of the sun into a mirror and then deflects it upon the wall. Suggestion is as different from projected consciousness as thinking about a place is different from being physically present. Projection is vivid, living, real, as when your physical body is going through an experience. For it is the action of your inner God self, with whom the Ascended Master is one, the Supreme. Saint Germain and I then became observers and actors in a scene of long ago. Again I was outwardly conscious of going through experiences shown me in thought, feeling, and action. The entire operation was as natural and normal as breathing, and the only unusual sensation about it was the feeling of greater freedom and a sense of dominion. We both became very still for a few moments as he revivified the etheric records, and my instruction began. "This is the Sahara Desert," he said, "when it was fertile country, having a semi-tropical climate. There were many streams of water carrying abundant moisture everywhere in the land. In the midst of this empire lay the capital, famous throughout the world for its splendor. The executive buildings were placed in the center upon a slight elevation, and from these the city itself extended equally in every direction. This civilization," he went on, "rose to its apex 70,000 years ago. We entered this city and felt an unusual rhythmic activity that gave one a strange sensation of lightness while walking. The people all moved about with great ease and grace. I asked Saint Germain the reason for this, and he replied, 'These people remembered their source and knew themselves as sons of God. Hence were the possessors and operators of power and wisdom that to you may seem miraculous and superhuman. Truthfully speaking, there are no such things as miracles, for all is according to law, and that which seems miraculous to the present concept of humanity is but the result of application of laws to which mankind's present consciousness is unaccustomed, and so seems strange and unusual. When the reality of life is correctly understood, all manifestation that seems miraculous to your present consciousness is found to be just as natural and normal an experience as the forming of words are to one who has learned the use of the alphabet. It is all the action of an ever-expanding, ever-progressing manifestation of life in form. And this comes about at all times through an orderly process of law, in love and peace. No matter how strange, unusual, and impossible an experience seems to humanity's present mental state, it is no proof that there is not a greater law and a wiser intelligence acting to produce greater wonders of creation surrounding us all the time. The knowledge of the greatest minds of humanity in the outer world today is to this great inner wisdom and power, as the understanding of a small child is to the study of calculus. In one building of the central group, we found the attendants attired in the most gorgeous fabrics of soft, radiant colors that harmonized with the interior decoration. One of these acted as guide, taking us to the central building, and there he presented us to the king of this great people. The king proved to be Saint Germain. Beside him stood a young girl, very beautiful. She had hair like spun gold that hung almost to the floor, and eyes of a piercing violet blue. Her entire bearing was one of loving command. I looked inquiringly at Saint Germain, wondering who she could be, and he answered, "Lotus." Beside her stood a young man about 20 years of age, and a lad perhaps 14. The young man was he whom we had seen as the high priest in the temple of Luxor, and the lad was the lesser priest. These were the children of the king. Again, we four were working together. "With this glimpse of former lives," he said, "let us enter into the activity of that blessed people. I say blessed advisedly, and you will soon see why. The majority of them still retain the full conscious use of all their wisdom and power as sons of God. And this they wielded almost without limit, knowing full well from whence they sprang and to what they were heirs. The outer was but the instrument of the divine self, as it should be, and was only permitted to do that for which it was created. Naturally, the great inner self could act unfettered. And, of course, the perfection and activity of that period was one of magnificent accomplishment. At the time of this former civilization, the whole empire was filled with great peace, happiness, and prosperity. The king emperor was a master of the ancient wisdom and a real cupbearer of the light. He ruled by that light, and his empire was the living example of perfection. For hundreds of years, Saint Germain continued, this perfection was maintained without army or navy of any kind. The control of the people was vested in the care of 14 ascended masters of light, 2 working on each of the 7 rays. They thus formed points of focus for the mighty God activity to be made visible. Under these 14 luminous beings were 14 lesser masters, who formed the heads of 7 departments, controlling the activities of science, industry, and art. Each of the department heads guided the work under his care by conscious and direct contact with the God in himself. Hence, direct from their source did all direction and instruction come for those under them. Thus, divine perfection was constantly flowing through without any interference from the human. This form of government was most remarkable, successful, and satisfactory in every way. There has never been anything on earth since that time which has even approached such heights. In the ancient records that have come down to the present day, this former civilization is always referred to as the Golden Age, and so it was in every activity of life. In your beloved America, in the not-so-far-distant future, will come forth a similar recognition of the real inner self, and this her people will express in high attainment. She is a land of light, and her light shall blaze forth, brilliant as the sun at noonday, among the nations of the earth. She was a land of great light ages ago, and will again come into her spiritual heritage, for nothing can prevent it. She is strong within her own mind and body, stronger than you think, and that strength she will exert to rise out of and throw off from border to border all that weighs heavily upon her at the present time. America has a destiny of great import to the other nations of the earth. And those who have watched over her for centuries still watch. Through their protection and love, she shall fulfill that destiny. America, we, the ascended host of light, love and guard you. America, we love you. A similar form of perfect government will come at a later period, when you have cast off certain fetters within that hang like fungi and sap your strength as a vampire. Beloved ones in America, be not discouraged when the seeming dark clouds hang low. Every one of them shall show you its golden lining. Back of the cloud that seems to threaten is the crystal pure light of God and his messengers, the ascended masters of love and perfection, watching over America, the government, and her people. Again I say, America, we love you. One by one, great awakened souls are coming forth, who will become clearly conscious of their own mighty inherent God power. And such as these will be placed in all official positions of the government. They will be more interested in the welfare of America than in their own personal ambitions and private fortunes. Thus will another golden age reign upon earth and be maintained for an aeon. In the period just preceding this, which you have been experiencing, the mass of the people used great airships for transportation purposes. As the development reached a still higher point, They had little need for them, except in the outlying districts. All the official class, because they were the more spiritually advanced souls of that race, were able to go from place to place in the finer bodies and do all they desired, the same as in your recent experience at Luxor. They also were able to transport the physical body at will, for the use of their power to overcome gravity was as natural as breathing is to you. Gold was a common commodity in this age, as in all golden ages, because its natural emanation is a purifying, balancing, and vitalizing energy of force. It is placed within the earth by the lords of creation, those great beings of light and love, who create and direct worlds, systems of worlds, and the expansion of the light in the beings upon them. The outer mind or intellectual knowledge of humanity holds within it little, very little, understanding of the real purpose for which gold exists on this planet. It grows within the earth like a plant, and through it there is constantly pouring a purifying, vitalizing, and balancing current of energy into the very ground we walk upon, as well as into the growth of nature and the atmosphere we breathe. Gold is placed upon this planet for a variety of uses, two of its most trivial and unimportant ones being that of using gold as a means of exchange and for ornamentation. The far greater activity and purpose of it, within and upon the earth, is the release of its own inherent quality and energy to purify, vitalize, and balance the atomic structure of the world. The scientific world today has no inkling, as yet, of this activity. However, it serves the same purpose to our earth that radiators do to your homes. Gold is one of the most important ways by which the energy from our sun is supplied to the interior of the earth, and a balance of activities maintained. As a conveyor of this energy, it acts as a transformer to pass the sun's force into the physical substance of our world, as well as to the life evolving upon it. The energy within gold is really a radiant electronic force from the sun, acting in a lower octave. Gold is sometimes called a precipitated sunray. As the energy within gold is of an extremely high vibratory rate, it can only act upon the finer and more subtle expressions of life through absorption. In all golden ages, this metal comes into plentiful and common use by the mass of the people, and whenever such a condition occurs, the spiritual development of that people reaches a very high state. In these ages, the gold is never hoarded, but instead is widely distributed into the use of the mass, who, absorbing its purifying energy, are themselves raised into greater perfection. Such is the right use of gold, and when this law is consciously understood and obeyed, the individual may draw any quantity he desires to himself by the use of that law. Because of the gold deposits in all mountain ranges, one finds health and vigor in life upon the mountains that he cannot find in any other place on the earth's surface. No one ever heard of detrimental effects coming to those who constantly handle pure gold. While in its pure state it is soft and wears away easily, still that very quality is a fulfilling of this purpose of which I have just spoken. The more advanced of these people produced much gold by precipitation, direct from the universal. The domes of many buildings were covered with sheets of pure gold, and the interior decorated with brilliant jewels in curious yet marvelous designs. These jewels were also precipitated, direct from the one eternal substance. As in all ages past, there was a portion of the people who became more interested in the temporary pleasures of the senses than in the larger creative plan of the great God Self. This caused them to lose consciousness of the God power throughout the land until it remained active in little more than the city itself. The capital was called the City of the Sun. Those governing realized they must withdraw and let the people learn through hard experience that all their happiness and good came from the adoration to the God within, and they must come back into the light if they were to be happy. The King Emperor, through the inner wisdom, seeing that the people were becoming still more deeply enmeshed in the sense gratification, realized that it was no longer the divine plan to further sustain the kingdom. He was instructed by those of greater spiritual authority than himself to give a banquet announcing his decision to withdraw, and thus bid his subjects farewell. He called the counselors together and gave directions for the banquet, ordering it held in the most magnificent place of the empire, known as a jeweled room in the king's palace. This was lighted by self-luminous globes that emitted a brilliant white radiance. They were suspended from the ceiling by chains of crystal. While the light within was intense and brilliant, yet it had an extremely soothing effect upon the body, giving those in its radiance a sense of great ease and calm. The light from the central globe set the jewels ablaze in the sunburst design that formed the great medallion in the middle of the ceiling. The large banquet hall was elaborately decorated and set with 24 white onyx tables, each seating 24 guests. This was the first occasion upon which all the king's counselors and their staffs were to be his guests at the same time. The announcement of the banquet caused much comment among the people, who discussed it thoroughly, each with his neighbor, but to all it was a mystery, for none was able to discern its purpose. The evening of the event came at last. No one suspected the sorrow within the heart of the noble ruler, nor did they dream of the change so soon to come upon them. The hour arrived, the guests assembled, and everyone breathed mystery. The great bronze doors to the banquet hall swung majestically open, and a burst of transcendent music, as if played by a gigantic symphony in the invisible, came forth, surprising even those who knew the tremendous power of their adored monarch. He was looked upon almost like a god by the people, so great was their love and admiration for the wisdom and help he constantly poured out to them. As the triumphal music ceased, the king entered, accompanied by his children. The girl was a vision of loveliness. She wore a gown of soft golden fabric, unlike any material of our modern world. The overdrape appeared as if covered with diamonds, for with every movement of her body points of light flashed forth. The golden hair, falling over her shoulders, was caught with two emerald clasps. On her forehead was a single band of white metal set with diamonds. In the center was what appeared to be a large diamond, but was really a powerful condensation of light, focused and maintained there by her father. The king was the only one in the whole empire who was entrusted with the use of such transcendent power. The royal family had never used these jewels of light in their contact with the outer world until that night. Such use of this power was only permitted in their private worship of the great God Self, of whose supreme presence they were keenly and constantly aware. The ruler and his two sons wore form-fitting garments of the same soft golden fabric as the daughter. These were as pliable as leather, but made of metallic gold with breastplates like a great sun of jewels. They wore sandals of the same material, also set with precious stones, and the wonderful jewel of light rested upon the forehead of each. The king gave a signal, and the assembled guests were seated. In a voice majestic and powerful, he poured out an invocation from the depths of his heart to that infinite Supreme One. O thou mighty, omnipresent source, thou who dost govern the universe, the flame in each human heart, We give love, praise, and gratitude unto thee for thine own life, light, and love in all things. We adore thee, and look only unto thee, the presence in all things, visible and invisible, evolved and unevolved, thou ceaselessly flowing stream of life, who doth forever pour thyself into all creation, the one self in all. My heart calls unto thee as never before to arouse these, my people, to their danger. For of late indifference to thee is creeping over them like a poisonous breath, producing a soul sleep, and drawing a veil before them that shuts out thy shining presence. If they must have the experience that consumes and burns away the dross and clouds of the outer self, then do thou sustain, and at last bring them forth in thy eternal perfection. I call unto thee, thou creator of the universe, thou supreme, omnipotent God. The king took his seat, and all waited in silent expectation. In a few moments, the service for each individual appeared before him. Course after course was served as if by unseen hands. The food coming in marvelous crystal and jeweled containers, then disappearing as soon as the course was finished, followed immediately by the succeeding one. Finally, the most elaborate banquet the empire had ever known came to an end. All was silence again, as if in breathless expectancy, anticipating some most unusual occurrence. The king arose and stood a few moments calmly waiting. Soon a crystal goblet appeared at the right hand of each guest. These were filled with a condensation of pure electronic essence, and for all who drank it, no matter how far down the ages his life stream extended, or how varied his experiences, he never could completely forget the God Self within. This soul protection was granted to those at the banquet as a reward for their faith and loyalty to the God in themselves, the king and the empire. The counselors and those present had served sincerely and continuously for the good of the empire, and for that service, soul protection through the centuries was given to them. Each lifted his goblet and drank to the God in himself, to his own flame of the Most High Living One. The proceedings of the banquet were broadcast to everyone in the empire through a radio similar to that which we use today. It was no larger than a dinner plate, yet powerful enough to receive what was happening at any point on the earth's surface. After the salutation to the divine self in each, all became very still. The atmosphere itself seemed perfectly motionless. In a few moments, a wondrous presence slowly became visible in front of the king. That presence was a cosmic master from out the great silence. A murmur of awe and surprise passed over the assembled guests at his appearance, as they recognized in amazement one of whom they had heard for many centuries, yet whose visible presence none had ever seen. Raising his right hand, he addressed those present and all dwelling within the empire. O children of earth, I bring you a warning of serious import at a time of great crisis. Arouse yourselves from the snare of the senses that is engulfing you. Awake from your lethargy before it is too late. This, my brother of light, must withdraw and leave you to the experience that you have chosen, and which is slowly enticing you into its many pitfalls. You have opened yourselves to the uncontrolled ignorance and emotions of the outer self, you give little attention and still less adoration to your source, the supreme, the mighty, the radiant, the majestic, the infinite cause of all that is, the creator and sustainer of all worlds. You give no gratitude to the great glorious presence, the Lord of love, for the very life by which you exist. Oh, why are you not even grateful for the blessings nature pours out so lavishly, for the abundance that comes to you through this fair land, and from your own wise and unselfish ruler? You thank each other's for favors, the things of the senses and form that are so ephemeral, that pass from one to another and then are no more. But why, oh why, do you forget the source of all life, all love, all intelligence, all power? People, oh people, where is your gratitude to life, for love, for the magnificence of experience that you enjoy every moment, every hour, every day, year after year? All this you call your own, but it has always belonged, does now, and always will belong to the one great source of life, light, love, and all good. God, the supreme, the adorable, the all-pervading one. When by your own misuse of the energy of life, which this all-pervading one showers upon you constantly, pure, perfect, and uncontaminated, you have created conditions so destructive and painful that they can no longer be endured, you turn in either desperation, agony, or rebellion, and call upon God for relief from your misery. This is your offering to the giver of all good, in return for that ceaseless perfection which he continually bestows in supreme love. The only condition upon which the one great self gives all is its right use, that it may bless the rest of creation with infinite joy, harmonious activity, and perfection. When in the depths of misery, you turn again to your source for relief from your misdeeds, you either cry in the agony of despair, or if rebellious, blame life and the source of all good for allowing what you call injustice and wrong conditions to exist in you and your world. It is you, the little personal self, who are unjust to life. You who are unfair. You who create the misery of earth. For only humanity, because it has free will to create as it chooses, each individual through his own thought and feeling dares to bring into existence the discord, misery, and deformity that express upon earth. This is a blight upon creation and the perfection that forever swings in the great cosmic melody of eternal song. Only mankind is guilty of making a discord in the music of the spheres, for all else lives and acts in accordance with the law of love, of life, of harmony, and of light. All else blends into the harmonious whole, the body of the infinite all-loving one. All other realms of life and light move and create according to the fundamental principle upon which all perfection rests. That principle is love. If it were not for the great selfless ones like your ruler, the great host of ascended masters, whose very keynote of existence is love, humanity would long ago have destroyed itself and the very planet upon which it exists. The transcendent and magnificent activities of love and light are the natural conditions in which God created and expected his human children to manifest, obeying his command to love. There is no such thing as a supernatural condition anywhere in the universe. All that is transcendent, beautiful, and perfect is natural, and according to the law of love. Anything other than that is subnatural. The daily experience of the host of ascended masters is the perfection God's children were meant to live in always. Earth's children did express this perfection once in a former cycle, which was one golden age. That former civilization, that ancient perfection, is older than you dream, older than you believe the planet to be. All mankind at that period lived in a similar transcendent state as the ascended masters. The condition of misery that has followed since that time down through the ages came about because mankind chose to look away from its source, love, as the plan by which to live life. When the children of Earth look away from love, they are deliberately and consciously choosing the experience of chaos. Whoever seeks to exist without love cannot survive long anywhere in creation. Such efforts are bound to bring failure, misery, and dissolution. Whatever lacks love must return to chaos, the unformed, so its substance may be used over again in combination with love, and thus produce a new and perfect form. This is the law of universal as well as individual life. It is immutable, irrevocable, eternal, yet beneficent, for creation in form exists that God may have something upon which to pour out love and so express in action. This is the law of the Mighty One from which all else proceeds. It is the mandate of eternity, and the vastness and brilliance of that perfection cannot be described in words. If there were not these actual, real, permanent, and perfect conditions of life and experience, which far transcend human description, existence would be but a travesty upon the stupendous activity of life that swings forever throughout creation. There are those higher, harmonious, transcendent spheres, realms of activity and consciousness, individual and cosmic, where creation goes on continually in joy, in love, in freedom, and in perfection. These are real, 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 and much more permanent than your bodies and buildings in the physical world about you. These realms of life are created of substance which is so charged with love that they can never have a quality or activity of discord, imperfection, or disintegration imposed upon them or registered within them. Because they are based upon love, the perfection of such a manifestation is forever maintained, ever active, ever expanding, ever blessing with joy all that exists. You bring woe upon yourselves, which propels you into embodiment again and again in the ignorance of the senses, the human appetites and desires of the outer self. These appetites in the feeling nature of mankind are in themselves but an accumulation of energy, which the individual through his thought and feeling has given a quality of one kind or another. This misqualified energy gathers a momentum through human expression and becomes habit. Habit is but energy specifically qualified and held focused for a time upon one objective. The sense appetites of former lives become the driving forces and habits of the succeeding ones, keeping you slaves, bound to the chariot wheels of discord, lack, and necessity, whirling you through a maze of human problems and experiences of your own creation, compelling you to learn and obey the law of the One, love. Your own miscreations drive you on and on and on, until you are willing to understand life and obey its one law, love. You whirl through life after life, experiencing discord upon discord, until you do learn to live the law of love. This is a compelling activity which none escape, and it continues until the outer self asks the reason for its misery and understands that its release from the experience of suffering can only come through obedience to the one law of love. Such obedience begins as calm, peace, and kindliness in the feelings whose center is in the heart. Its contact with the outer world must come through the inner feeling. Love is not an activity of the mind, but is the pure and luminous essence which creates mind. This essence from the great God flame streams into substance and constantly pours itself out as perfection in form and action. Love is perfection manifest. It can only express peace, joy, and an outpouring of those feelings to all creation unconditionally. It asks nothing for itself, because it is eternally self-creating, being the heartbeat of the Supreme. Love owns all, and is only concerned with setting the plan of perfection into action in all. Thus, it is a constant pouring out of itself. It takes no cognizance of what has been given in the past, but receives its joy and maintains its balance by the continual outstreaming of itself. Because this perfection is within love, forever flowing forth, it is incapable of recording anything but itself. Love alone is the basis of harmony and the right use of all life. In human experience, this grows into a desire to give and give and give of all the individual's peace and harmony unto the rest of creation. People, O people, forever throughout the ages, only enough love can bring you back to the heaven you once knew and abided in. Here you will once again embrace the fullness of the great light that gives all through love. A visiting prince approaches your borders. He will enter this city seeking the daughter of your king. You will come under the rule of this prince, but the recognition of your mistake will be futile. Nothing can avail, for the royal family will be drawn into the protection and care of those whose power and authority are of God, and against whom no human desire can ever prevail. These are the great ascended masters of light from the golden etheric city over this land. Here your ruler and his beloved children will abide for a cycle of time. Turning to the king, he addressed him, saying, "I bless you, my noble, patient brother. Loving and selfless has been the service to your people. Deep and eternal is your devotion to the Supreme One, the source of all creation. The golden etheric city awaits and joyously welcomes you and your children. Within its radiance you will live, serving through the rays of light which are forever streaming out from those who dwell therein, until these your people shall redeem themselves by obedience to the law of love. This empire of light exists over the land you have loved so well. It is composed of self-luminous etheric substance and rests above the physical city, which is your capital. It is real, very real, and much more permanent than any earthly city, for light is indestructible, and the golden city is made of light. Into it, no inharmonious thought or disturbing condition of any kind can ever enter. I will return in 7 days to take you and your children into the City of Light, where we shall watch the progress of humanity and draw into the light all who will discipline and make themselves ready. Encircling the city is an invincible belt of electronic force through which it is impossible for anything uninvited to pass. When he had finished speaking, he blessed the royal family, the guests, and the empire. And in the moments of silence that followed, his light and the outline of his body within it grew fainter and fainter until it disappeared entirely. A murmur passed through the great banquet hall, and as all looked toward the king, his head was bowed in reverent silence. Then he slowly arose and bade his guests good night. On the seventh day, the brother from out the silence returned, and enfolding the king and his children within his own blazing aura, withdrew into the golden etheric city of light. The visiting prince arrived the next day, discovered the condition of the empire and the consternation that still held sway over its people. He at once subtly planned to become its ruler. This he accomplished without opposition. 2,000 years later, most of that empire had become barren land. The streams dried up, and desolation stretched everywhere. All the result of the discord and selfishness of mankind, and the blight it becomes upon the growth of plant life in nature. This kingdom had extended the entire width of Africa on east until it reached the Himalayan mountains. There followed a great cataclysm, submerging all the land. Through that change, an inner sea was formed where the Sahara Desert now lies. Another earth change, which took place about 12,000 years ago, drained this sea, and a part of it later became the present Sahara Desert. The River Nile, as it is today, most nearly resembles the beautiful streams on that long-forgotten period. Thus ended our observation of those very ancient scenes. I could hardly believe my senses. I was so astonished at the way the experiences of the past were revivified, pictures projected in all three dimensions, and the activity of the people in that remote age portrayed. Realizing how surprised and unaccustomed to such activities I was, Saint Germain promised to take me to the physical records of that period and its people, and give me physical proof that it was not a vision conjured up by him. Glancing around from the log upon which we were seated, we saw the panther lying nearby, fast asleep. Saint Germain took up the explanation of several important phases on the application of higher laws, for the manifesting of one's own inherent dominion over the things of the sense world. This led to how he was able to express such youth and perfection in a body so old, according to the way human beings count time. Eternal youth, he explained, is the flame of God abiding in the body of man, the Father's gift of himself to his creation. Youth and beauty of both mind and body can only be kept permanently by those individuals who are strong enough to shut out discord, and whosoever does that can and will express perfection and maintain it. Where peace, love, and light do not abide within the thoughts and feelings of a human being, no amount of physical effort can possibly keep the outer self expressing youth and beauty. These exist eternally within the God flame, which is the divine self of every individual. Whatever discord the outer self allows to flash through the thought and feeling is that instant stamped upon the flesh of the physical body. Eternal youth and beauty are self-created and forever self-existent within the flame of God's life in every human being. This is God's plan for manifesting his perfection into the world of form and maintaining it forever. Youth, beauty, and perfection are attributes of love, which the God Self is continually pouring forth into its creation. Within each individual is placed the power and means for maintaining and increasing that perfect, ever-expanding activity of creation. The power of accomplishment is the energy of the God Self in each human being born into the world. It is always active every moment in your mind, body, and world. There is no instant in which this mighty energy is not flowing through all individuals. You are privileged to qualify it as you please at the command of your own free will through consciously directed thought and feeling. Thought is the only thing in the universe that can create vibration, and through vibration you qualify this ever-flowing energy with whatever you desire to have manifest in your life and world. This limitless, intelligent, radiant energy is flowing ceaselessly through your nervous system and is the eternal life and vitality in the bloodstream coursing through your veins. It is an all-powerful, omnipresent, intelligent activity given you by the Father, the God principle of life, to be consciously directed according to your free will. Real intelligence, which uses everything constructively, comes only from within the God principle, the flame of life, and is not merely the activity of the intellect. Real intelligence is wisdom or God knowledge, and this does not and cannot think wrong thoughts. Wrong thoughts come only from impressions made upon the intellect by the world outside of the individual. If individuals would discriminate between their own thoughts, that is, thoughts from within the God flame, and the suggestions thrown off by other people's intellects and the evidence of the senses, which consider appearances only, they would be able to avoid all discordant activities and conditions in the world of experience. The light from within one's own God flame is the criterion, the standard of perfection, by which all thoughts and feelings that reach us through the five senses should be tested. No one can keep his thoughts and feelings qualified with perfection unless he goes to the source of perfection, for that quality and activity only abide within the God flame. This is the individual's need for meditation upon and communion with the light of God within himself. Pure life essence will not only give and sustain eternal youth and beauty in the body, but will enable you to maintain perfect balance between your God self and the outer or personal self. In fact, this pure life energy is the power which the outer self uses to hold its connection with its divine source, the God self. In reality, these two are one, except when the intellect or outer activity of the mind, the sense consciousness, accepts imperfection, inharmony, incompleteness, or thinks itself a creation apart from the all-pervading one presence of life. If the sense consciousness thinks itself something separate from God, perfection, then that condition is established unto it. For what the sense consciousness thinks into its world, the world returns to it. When one lets an idea of imperfection or separation from God occupy his attention, and therefore his mind, a condition corresponding to that begins to express itself in his body and world. This causes the person to feel himself an entity apart from his source. The moment he thinks himself separated from God, he thinks his life, intelligence, and power has beginning and end. Life always has been, is now, and always will be. No one can really destroy life. Through various activities in the mental and physical world, form can be disintegrated or temporarily demolished, but the consciousness of the individual is eternal and can control all substance everywhere in manifestation when the God life within is acknowledged as the knower, giver, and doer of all good in creation. I tell you truth when I say there is only one source of all good, God. The conscious recognition and acceptance of this truth, acknowledged by the outer activity of the mind, not two or three times a day, but every few moments all day long, no matter what the outer self is doing, and this maintained will enable anyone to express his perfect freedom and dominion over all things human. To most people, the above sounds difficult, for they have lived so many centuries in the belief that they are beings apart from God, while every instant of every day they are using God life, God energy, God substance, and God activity in everything they think and do without realizing it. However, it requires the conscious admitting of this fact in the outer activity of the mind and constructive direction to release its full power through the personal self. Recognition, conscious direction, and constructive use of the God energy maintained within oneself at all times is the way of perfection, mastery, and dominion over all things on earth, including the conscious control of all natural forces. The instruction I have been giving you will erase completely all false beliefs, if maintained. The rapidity with which it is accomplished depends upon how continuously, persistently, and deeply you feel and associate with your God self. In the attainment of mastery or adeptship, the conscious control of all force and manipulation of substance are dependent first upon the acknowledgement of your own individual God self, second, upon perfect calmness of feeling under all circumstances, and third, one must be above all temptation of misusing power. The stilling of all emotions at the command of the conscious will is imperative, and the demand for it in the adept is unconditional if dominion is to be attained. It does not mean a repression of discord within oneself at any time, but is a stilling and harmonizing of the feelings, no matter what the circumstances are which surround the mind or body of the student. Such control is not an easy thing for humanity in the Western world, because the temperament of most people in the Occident is sensitive, emotional, and impulsive. This characteristic is energy of tremendous power. It must be controlled, held in reserve, and released only through conscious direction for the accomplishment of something constructive. Until the waste of energy is checked and completely governed, the individual cannot and never will make permanent progress. The student often asks if one reaches a point while still on the path of attainment where he rises above the use of affirmation. When an individual sincerely uses affirmation, he brings about a full acceptance of the truth of whatever he affirms, for its use is but to focus the attention of the outer mind so steadily upon the truth that he accepts it fully in his feelings, because feeling is the actual God energy released, which manifests the truth affirmed. The continued use of affirmation brings one to the point where he has such a deep realization of the truth in anything he affirms that he is no longer conscious of it as an affirmation. One uses an affirmation, mantra, or prayer because he desires something made manifest. Right desire is the deepest form of prayer. Thus, by the use of affirmation, the student raises his outer self into the full acceptance of its truth and generates the feeling by which it becomes a thing manifest. In this deep acceptance comes the manifestation, for through concentration, the spoken word begins to cause instantaneous activity. My gratitude to Saint Germain for all I had received was too deep for words. He read my thoughts and feelings as one reads a book, and so we both sat silent for some few moments, in perfect attunement. He roused me from my reverie to watch the gorgeous colors in the western sky, the sunset's afterglow. I wanted to remain on the mountain all night and return home in the morning enjoying the sunrise. I had no sooner felt the desire than a beautiful sleeping bag lay at my feet. It was unlike anything I have ever seen. I reached down to examine the unusual fabric of which it was made, and to my astonishment found it glowing and warm. I looked up, and Saint Germain smilingly extended to me a crystal cup, filled with golden liquid about the consistency of honey. Obedient to his slightest wish, I drank it, and instantly a radiant glow passed through my body. When I had finished, the cup disappeared in my hand. Oh, why could I not keep this lovely creation? I asked in surprise. Patience, my son, he answered. Are not your desires being fulfilled one by one? Your sleeping bag will remain until daybreak, and your friend the panther will guard you during the night. Bowing slightly, and with a smile that was graciousness itself, his body became gradually indistinct, and then disappeared entirely. I lay down in the lovely bag and was soon fast asleep. As the rosy tints of dawn touched the eastern horizon, I awoke, and the first thought in my mind was concerning the bag, which I had so much enjoyed. With that thought it vanished, back into the universal substance from which it had come. The panther came toward me, and together we turned our footsteps homeward. After walking for some distance, the sound of men's voices caught our ears. The animal sniffed the air, suddenly stopped directly in front of me and looked up. I reached down and, patting it, said, "Now you may go." It bounded away into the thickly wooded section of the mountain to the right of the trail. I continued on my way without further incident, and at last reached my lodgings shortly after noon, in a state of mind hard to find words to describe. I wanted to think, contemplate, digest, and become adjusted to an entirely new set of ideas. The unusual yet very real experiences through which I had passed within the 48 hours just preceding were causing me to reorder my entire world. I was happy in the extreme, and yet it seemed as if another universe had manifested itself around me. There was the same old prosaic world on the outside that I had always known, to be sure. And yet, was it? Within it, all the time had been these wonderful experiences, this tremendous power, these marvelous revelations of freedom and dominion over all manifestation, of which I had been so totally unaware. I had been surrounded all my life by these seeming miracles, to which in my previous years I was as oblivious as if no such thing existed in creation. I thought and thought, deeper and deeper than I had ever contemplated anything before in my whole existence. The dinner hour arrived, but I was not hungry. However, to begin the evening meal, I ordered a glass of milk. It was served, and a few moments later, as I tasted it, imagine my astonishment to find that it had become the same creamy liquid Saint Germain had first given me. I finished the meal, returned home, and was preparing my bath before retiring, when suddenly the familiar electrical signal thrilled me from head to foot. Involuntarily, I held out my hand, and in a few seconds a small cake of crystal-like substance formed in the palm. I somehow knew this was to be put in my bath, and had no more than dropped the substance into the water than it immediately bubbled and sparkled as though alive. I stepped in, and a tingling sensation thrilled every cell in my body. I felt charged with a high-powered electrical current that illumined and strengthened my whole being. My bath finished, I lay down, and soon dropped into a dreamless sleep.